Welcome, everybody.
Okay.
Here we are for another episode. It's episode we checked before. It's episode 13. Lucky episode
13.
Lucky
number 13. Yep.
Yep. Yep. So another week in the books. And I know I hinted before here that I'm going to get you with a couple, not necessarily movie trivia, but a couple things to talk about. So at first, did you watch The Beekeeper?
No, we haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it? Okay.
Nope.
Yeah. Still worth a watch. So keep it on your list.
Okay. Okay.
And then my nephew spent the end of his, I wanted to say summer vacation. That's weird. March break vacation with us. And I don't know if he was super enthused about it, but my wife and him watched Slither one night, late at night. They're both
classic
Nighthawks. Yeah, they're both Nighthawks. Yeah. I had long gone to bed. And in the morning we were talking and she's like, watch Slither. And
what did he think?
Yeah, I don't know if he was just being nice, but he's like, yeah, it wasn't bad. So anyways, he's seen the classic now. So that was a good one. Did you watch anything interesting this week?
Let me think here. Not particularly, no.
No
we nothing. Didn't. I'm away from home this week, so.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, no. So yeah, you're working remotely.
That's right.
Just because we're talking about Gen AI and stuff, which we'll get to here in a minute, but Karen found, I can't remember even what it's called now. It's like a TV show. Lasted one season, 10 episodes. So it's got to be some high quality stuff. But
oh, yeah.
She was saying that it was about an AI that sort of gets out of its container, rogue AI. And I think we might try to find it on a streaming service. Because she was sitting here as I was going through articles, getting ready. And she's like, oh, don't you remember that show about the rogue AI? And I have no idea what you're talking about. So she looked it up on IMDb, and I think we're going to see if we can find it this weekend. And I'm sure it's going to be really bad. But,
oh, yeah.
Just to see. So, anyways.
You know, did watch.
Oh, go ahead.
We watched two Leprechaun movies.
Oh,
for St.
Yeah,
Patrick's Day.
We talked about the Leprechaun.
Pathetic green light here.
Yeah. You made me. I looked over. I saw a green light. It reminded me. So you watch. How many did you watch?
The first and second one. And I cannot recommend it. They're not good movies, but they were beaten. Thematic.
We did watch the first Leprechaun as well. And to be honest, I wasn't even thinking about. I think I told you this. I wasn't even thinking about St. Patrick's Day. We were actually looking for Slither, and we were on Amazon Prime Video,
yeah.
And one of the things, I've said this to you before, is one of the things that I like about Amazon Prime, the video service, is it does a really great job. If you search for something, it's like, you might also like this. So we found Slither, and I was going through the list, and Leprechaun was there, and I'm like, oh my God, but what caught my eye was I didn't realize Jennifer Aniston was in that.
Yeah, it's one of her earliest things, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's right at the, when you look her up on IMDb, it's like right at the bottom. It's like a very early acting credit. So the best part about the whole story was I say to Karen, I'm like, oh my God, Jennifer Aniston is in this movie. And she's like, what? And my nephew looks at us and goes, who's Jennifer Aniston? He's 16, so.
Right.
Yeah, it is what it is, right? So there was a lot of second screening while we watched The Leprechaun, myself included. It was a tough movie to watch. I don't think he looked up from his phone for maybe more than 5. So it wasn't a real attention grabber. But it had moments where we had some pretty good little chuckles about how horribly bad it was. So.
Yeah.
All right. I think maybe what we should do, we should do two podcasts a week. Just because, you know, we're not,
one,
we don't have other
specifically
things
about movies.
Just
movies. We're 10 minutes in already, right?
Yeah, we should just have a movie podcast. And then, you know, if we get around to the Gen AI thing, we could do that instead.
Yeah.
All right. So, we should do a test and see what gets more views. I bet you would be at least one more on the movie podcast versus the Amazon podcast. We'd go from one viewer to two. All right. So enough shenanigans. Let's get into the updates from the week. This one, you and I both said it was on our list here. DynamoDB now supports private link.
Yes.
So this is interesting, right? Why don't you start us off on this, and then I'll share my thoughts.
Sure, yeah. So this is another one of those endpoint services you can deploy into a VPC to get private connectivity to an Amazon service, right? So, you know, they have S3, they have EC2, SSN, all kinds, a huge variety of services you can plug into just so you're not going out across the public internet, right?
Yeah, and, exactly.
For the longer, now they have DynamoDB, which is great. If you're using that NoSQL database in your stack, you don't have to go out to the internet to hit those APIs anymore. So,
yeah, I thought it was fantastic. So DynamoDB has always supported gateways, endpoints, but it only ever supported It's always supported VPC endpoints, but it was only supported with the gateway endpoint,
right?
Up until this point.
Yep.
And now you can do this. So I guess, like, what's the difference between the gateway endpoint and interface endpoint? The way I always think of it, and I think it's an oversimplification, but it's the way that I keep it straight in my head when we're doing training and stuff like that, is think of the gateway endpoint as basically an entry in your route table.
Yeah.
Right? Versus interface endpoint is essentially a private IP address that gets provisioned inside your VPC that you can then use to access through that interface endpoint, not just a route table entry. And the interesting thing about interface endpoints is it allows us then to access, in this example, DynamoDB from outside of that VPC.
Yeah.
I know there's some fancy things you can do with gateway endpoints to get to that routing table from somewhere else, but an interface endpoint does a really good job at that.
It makes it easier for sure, right? When you're routing in large multi-VPC environments. So
Yeah. The only thing you have to keep in mind with this is it will increase your costs.
Right.
Because you're going to pay for the interface endpoint. The way I generally think about this is you're going to have two interface endpoints. Like if you think the standard VPC, you're going to end up with an interface endpoint in each of your AZs just for redundancy. So you pay, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think I'm on the right path. You pay by the hour that interface endpoint is available, and then pay a data processing fee.
Correct, yeah.
Like how much data is going through that ENI essentially.
Yeah.
But I said to you earlier today when we were talking about something else, I've already had a customer ask us about this. Because we're doing a specific implementation for them, and they're like, is there a way to do this that would be like less public internet-y? And I was like, perfect time to ask that or ask that question because I have an answer. Here it is. So we're going to look at this next week, actually, in a real life scenario and see what we can do with it.
Great.
Yeah. And along those lines with DynamoDB is, and this makes a lot of sense, right? That it also now supports resource-based policies, because one of the things with an interface endpoint is that I think in the AWS training that I do, they always talk about this idea of layers of defense. So with this now, you've got the security group that goes around your interface endpoint, but then you also have a resource-based policy that isn't there by default, correct?
Correct. Yeah, you have to define it. But yeah, it lets you specify specific IAM actions and permissions per on what API calls can go through that endpoint and reach what tables essentially, which is it's similar to the S3 and other endpoints. It just gives you another layer
of protection. Whether you decide to use it or not, that's going to be up to you. But just having that as option to meet your requirements, right? Where now you can kind of layer those layers, but you know what I'm trying to say. You've got multiple layers of defense here if you needed them to satisfy your requirements. I feel like I'm
exactly
myself. So this is another good one here. And I threw this one in just because of all the fun that we had with CloudFormation last week. We now have another CloudFormation update where we can view, that went into my brain about what I wanted to say. And then as quickly as it went in, it just, this is going to allow us to understand where our stack sets are deployed without having to jump into each account.
So, okay, great.
Yeah. If I'm understanding this correctly, prior to this, if you were using stack sets, and maybe we should define stack sets first, just if you're unclear, right? So a stack set is a tool that you could use to centrally manage a CloudFormation stack or a template and deploy it across multiple accounts in multiple regions.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess we don't actually use a lot of stack sets, but we run into them with things like Control Tower and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. A lot of solutions provided for in the AWS marketplace will leverage stack sets.
Stack sets, yeah. You know what? Maybe this release will change my mind a little bit. And this might be just sort of misunderstanding the value prop of this particular feature. But one of the things that always, I liked the concept of being able to centrally manage all of your templates and say,
right,
I want this particular template to go to every account in one region or multiple regions. I think this idea of sort of, it reminds me a lot of sort of AWS organizations, right? You've got the management account and a bunch of member accounts.
Oh, yeah.
Same idea. I liked the thought of it, but one of the challenges that I always had is exactly this statement here. Customers no longer have to log into individual accounts under a given OU to get information.
Mm.
And this just might be my lack of understanding, but a lot of times when we use a stack set to deploy, it didn't work somewhere, right? And then you couldn't necessarily get all the information you wanted in your management account. So then you had to go over to, I'll call it a member account just to use that. You had to go over to where you were trying to deploy that stack and go through the CloudFormation logs there to try to figure it out. And if I'm understanding this API call correctly, you're now able to get that information from one central location. So that maybe that'll streamline some of the troubleshooting.
That'd be nice because, yeah, you could run into issues with regional differences, right? Like services not being available where you're trying to deploy a stack. But yeah, if you can get visibility into these deployments from, someone calling.
Is that your answering machine going off in the background?
That is definitely an answering machine. Yeah.
Awesome. It's from the past.
Yeah. But yeah, this is another great visibility improvement for this kind of deployment. So,
which is kind of, I don't know if I'm like manufacturing this memory, but there's a lot of, we talk a lot about this idea of quality of life updates. There seems to be, over the last couple of weeks, there seems to have been a lot of these kind of what a lot of people like consider kind of, oh, who cares? Like it's not a big thing, but these quality of life improvements that just make managing environments easier, right? So I think this kind of falls in that category again.
Agreed. And I think that it's interesting, right? Because there might be some pressure on AWS to improve their UI in some cases, just because of those new services like Vercel, that kind of stuff, they're wrapping AWS services in another service, right? So maybe that has...
sort of spurred some of these things along. Yeah, it could be, right? Like I know a lot of times... I don't know. I have other things to worry about, so I don't really complain too much about the console. But I know it is something that a lot of people like to complain about. And you know, it's also, it's so funny how we have these conversations and I'm able to tie it back to other things. Like we were talking, my wife and I were talking just today about this idea of getting engagement through rage inducement is what I called it, right? If you say, look, I ate spaghetti for dinner, nobody cares. But if you say, I had a razor blade in my spaghetti, blows up all over the place. I think a lot of times, you know, when people are complaining about, I saw another thread about cold starts and how Lambda cold starts will still get lots of engagement on the social platforms because people get upset about it. Even though for, I would say, 95% of the people out there, it's really not going to make 1 ounce of difference in your environment. But I think again, just the management console still does a pretty good job at inducing rage in certain people that bodes well on social platforms. So yeah, you might be right. Just kind of trying to tighten these up a bit, right, and make them a little more user friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's stack sets, and then you added this one. You can zoom.
Yes.
Here. And the zoom thing. Here we go. There we go.
Yeah, so this is a news item. They just added support for custom images for Lambda Compute in AWS Code Build. And essentially what you could do is you could run your builds on an AWS Lambda basically compute service, right? and the Lambda functions would go and run your builds. But now you could only use a specific image that AWS provided. Now you can provide your own image. So if you need more customized builds than what the official image provides, you can do that in Lambda now.
Yeah. Oh, I totally misunderstood this one. Okay, so let me tell you what my impression was and what you just think about. So I've always thought of code build as sort of like just a managed CI solution. You tell it which image you want it to use. I didn't even realize, I'll be honest, that you could use Lambda Compute as, I'll call it, the build platform for your job. I didn't even realize you could do that.
Yep.
Oh.
So, yeah, the difference, like, I think the official image comes with Python install, that kind of stuff, right? Like the basics for running what you need. But yeah, now you can custom build it in Docker. I mean, you can't use this for jobs that'll take longer than 15 minutes because of the Lambda runtime default, like a max setting. But if you have a quick build and you need a custom Docker image, basically, then now you can do that.
Like we don't run into code build a whole lot. Like I can think of one place where we've seen this. Most people just, for whatever reason, don't use it. And I'm always thinking maybe I'm just getting some of the terms and stuff mixed up in my head, but I never even thought about Lambda with code build, because when you create your build job, you just select, like, you know, I'll select a Ubuntu image, and in my brain, maybe I just always misunderstood it. I always just thought that was an EC2 instance that came to life and then went away.
That's the main one, right? Is EC2, but they do offer other compute.
There you go. I never realized that. You learn something every day.
There you go. Yep.
It's the double-edged sword of the AWS platform. It's so massive.
That's right.
It changes so much. You can never know everything. And anybody that tells you they do know everything is stretching the truth a little bit. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So that is the AWS news portion of the show. So let's change over to the real fun stuff. Not that this isn't fun. Let's talk about Gen AI. I love the headline of this one. This is what made me stop and read this. They want 99% of the
That's so, literally the AWS wants 99% of the AI market is the headline.
Yeah. That's like me writing an article for our blog. We want 99% of the managed services market for clients that are running infrastructure in AWS. Of course we do, right? I think that's sort of obvious. But what I really liked this article. Once I kind of had a chuckle about this silly headline, as I read through it, I thought it was a really interesting, you know, that the fact that, okay, they're the cloud compute market leader, but they also want to become the market leader in AI, right? Makes a lot of sense. The fact that he's got the ability, by he, I mean, Amazon CEO has a tool chest here for data centers and purpose-built chips. So really, it's like probably leveraging what they already have to sort of, we've talked about this in the past, just they are playing catch up at this point, right? Collaboration with other companies. I thought this was a really neat, concise article that sort of just talked about sort of like, what is it that AWS is doing now to try to, well, gather 99% of the market. And I just really like this, right? The idea of, you know, housing and renting GPUs. Amazon wants to be known for that. There was something else that really stuck out here. Oh, geez, I won't be able to find it now.
So yeah, so the main points are they're trying to be the main GPU rental provider. Yeah. And using Bedrock to open up a playground, it looks like.
Pretty much. And you know what? I can say I probably use the chat. Do they call it the chat playground in Bedrock? That's what they call it.
I think so. Yep.
I use that every single day now.
Wow. Okay.
It's really weird. Like what I'm finding is that even in some cases, I'm kind of going between Q and Bedrock. My rationale, like the reason I'm doing it is I used to think about it as not switching context. Like I'm in my IDE. I don't want to leave there to go and search for why my Python script doesn't work. And Q is really good at that. So I've got it right there in the sidebar. Ask it a question. 9 times out of 10, it's good, right? So I'm using Q all the time for that. And then what I've started to notice I'm doing, and I realize it's context switching, but I'm very quickly jumping over to Bedrock, and I'm primarily at this point using Anthropic. What's the one? Sonnet, right?
Sonnet, okay. Yeah.
And first off, it's insanely fast. And, you know, I didn't find this article that I wanted to share, but they're talking about the context windows with these large language models getting larger and larger. And what I've noticed, and I haven't looked, and you might know this, but the context window for that seems quite large. Because
it is.
As
it's
I'm
huge.
Having a conversation, it's pulling information. Like I asked it the other day to help me refine a one-page document that I had on some best practices. And I just find it as a great little partner as you're working on this stuff. And fed it a PNG file because I had already created a PDF. I converted it to PNG, loaded that up into Claude here, or Claude, and said, could you help me refine this? And it did a good job. And then I started asking it questions. And I'm really finding that I'm spending a lot of my time either with Q or in the Bedrock playground, whatever you want to call it. It's two of my biggest sort of work companions through the day now.
That's
amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think the context window was initially 200K tokens on launch for Claude. And I'm sure they've scaled it up a bit by now, but that's what, like 170,000, 150,000 words, somewhere in that range.
Yeah. It's right. Because it's not a one to one, like one character, one token. It's there's something that it does, right? To decide what constitutes a token.
Yeah. That's what's probably more like 100,000 words or less, but still, that's a lot of words, right? Like,
yeah. And I read somewhere, and don't quote me on this one. I wish I included this article, but I've lost track of it. I'm pretty sure that they said something like the context window for, is it Gemini 1.5 is like, it's like six figures. It's massive.
It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah. This is almost like, I know it's going to talk about clickbait headlines. I tried to make myself sound smarter than I am, and I forgot what I was going to say. It feels like just like the AI war, right? Oh, you can do you can have a context of 500. I can have a context of 1,000, and it's just going to like keep going and going and going. So I thought this was interesting. They launched the competency partners for AI. 40 companies signed up for that, or are sort of in the initial thing. I meant to have a look at. What are the requirements to become a competency partner for Gen AI in AWS?
Yeah.
Might be something we should look at. Just
definitely.
Just to see what you know, a lot of times I say to people, like, I think the competency programs, the SDP programs from AWS are kind of like crystal ball gazing a little bit. Sometimes you kind of interpret them a little to try to figure out or get a sense maybe of what AWS is thinking about. So yeah, might be worth some looks. So I thought this was kind of neat.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I don't want to subscribe. Thank you. This here, I have followed Ethan on Twitter for a long, long time. And this was an article that they posted on Twitter last week sometime, and I stumbled across it, and it's really interesting. And I think this is a question, again, that probably a lot of people are trying to figure out, like, what should I be doing here? And I thought,
what's the best path?
What's the best path? And he does a really good job here, kind of thinking or like talking about each one. You know, all of them have ghosts. Let's get rid of this again. They're multimodal, right? They can see images. I love this. None of them come with instructions. And you and I have sort of talked about this. And I think, again, this is another reason why I'm spending so much of my workday. Like with Q and with Bedrock, at some point our customers are going to start asking us about this stuff. And my thought process is, right or wrong, that I better figure out some of this stuff. And this comment sort of, or this section here kind of resonated with me, because I'm like, a lot of times I'm just tooling around and seeing what it does, you know?
Yeah.
How does it work, right?
feels like it's inevitable. It's going to come up at some point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is a really great piece of advice right here. This is why I keep urging people to spend the 10 hours they need with any frontier model to learn what they do and how they can help. Like, yeah. This is just about experimentation, making yourself comfortable with it. I was showing Karen some stuff today that I was doing in Bedrock, and she's like, you should have seen the look on her face. She's like, well, I don't understand how that worked. And I'm like, I don't understand it either. would suspect that really nobody does. But she's like, well, how did it get all that from your little 2 cents? And we had this whole conversation, and it's really just about experimentation and trying this stuff out, right?
At this point, it is, right? Like, a lot of the flagship models are very similar in terms of capability and user interface and output, right?
Yeah.
So you have to go in and play around and figure out the prompting, and that's going to, hopefully those techniques are still relevant in
a year or whatever. Well, one of the articles that you shared might suggest that those will not be relevant in a very short period of time, but we'll save that for a minute. And look at this. They all prompt similarly to each other. Context windows. Maybe this is what I was remembering, what I said about the size of the context windows. So it's a long article. It's going to test your ability to stay focused and actually read something rather than looking at a video in 30-second snippets like me. But I thought it was really good. And look, he mentions Devin. Remember Devin from last week?
There he is.
Yeah.
He's back.
Yeah. It's making the rounds. I saw quite a few 30-second takes on Devin last week.
Yeah.
On various socials. And most of them weren't very good. Now, I think Ethan here takes a little bit of a different spin on it. And he's got screenshots, talks about a project that he was working on or testing it out. To be clear, AI systems aren't good enough to do this work autonomously, blah, 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 crashed. But I think his point here is exactly this. We're still early days, and interesting use case, right?
That's the thing. And I think, again, this is going to come back to this is my opinion of what the most valuable part of all this is the simulation potential, right? Like accelerating discoveries you can make or task automation, that kind of stuff. So that's all going to get, like, it's a flywheel, right? Like tech is going to keep improving, and people are going to keep building on each other. And as these models get better and better with the multimodal inputs, like the visual inputs, I mean, who knows where the limit is, right? But
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. The one thing that I would say about agents, because you and I have talked about this a couple times. And this is really interesting to me. Keep getting bogged down in the details. And this idea of sort of, again, I'm going to explain what I think this means, and you tell me if I'm missing the mark here. But basically, I could create an agent that's a marketing expert. I could create an agent that's a sales expert. And then I could task those agents to go off and sort of work together on a problem, and they sort of exchange information and provide back a final answer. Is that sort of, am I thinking about it the right way?
That's kind of the idea, right? Is you delegate like an AI, like an agent to go do a set of tasks or a task, like you give it a goal, and then it has to figure out how to accomplish those, right? Like, so you outline a plan and then it works through the plan, which is kind of how Devin works.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
The reason I went back to agents and sort of made sure I was on the right page here is one of the things that I think, again, this idea of just experimenting, trying things out with this is what I keep doing with this is I'm like, okay, I'm going to go write some code that is an agent, that's the marketing agent and stuff like that. And I get so far down in the weeds. And what I tried, it was between, let's say, our last podcast and now, I was like, I wonder if I could just do the same sort of thing, maybe not in such an autonomous or automated fashion. So I tried it in Bedrock. And what I did was I went in and I said, okay, you're a marketing, like I gave it that context, right? I said, okay, this, you are a marketing person and I need you to create X. And it went and did that. Kind of think this is the idea of an agent. So then I was like, I wonder what it would do is if I switched its context on it during this conversation. And I said, okay, now that you've done that, I want you to be Y instead, right? So let's say marketing and then finance. I'll just make it up. I want you to take the information that you know from the marketing team and now do this. And I was actually pretty surprised. I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I was pretty surprised at how it took the marketing data and transformed it.
Cleared it.
Gave me a decent answer on, okay, so if you want to do that, here's some finance info that would be important to know. It felt like sort of this idea of having agents talk back and forth, but I was just kind of doing it in the chat itself. It worked.
Well, you know, it's like, it's using the same technology underlying each time, right? The thing with agents is context and what do you want it to do? How do you want it to respond? If you can, that's essentially like, if you can define the context for each agent, you have unique, like different takes on tasks or input.
So this article is well worth it. I really enjoyed this. This one here, this is a huge article. It's a very technical article. It's all about Meta and their Gen AI infrastructure. And what caught my eye on this one is the scale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like you can see here, they've got kind of the highlights, right? And the third bullet point here, this announcement is one step in our ambitious infrastructure roadmap. By the end of 2024, we're aiming to continue to grow our infrastructure build-out that will include 350,000 NVIDIA GPUs.
Yep.
I'm like, wow. So is that still why I can't get a graphics card?
Different kind of graphics card.
like, look at this. And this is the amazing part, okay? So their goal is to get 350,000 GPUs. Okay? And then you read on and they're like, well, this is what we have today. A 24,000 GPU cluster. So we're orders of magnitude larger here in very, very short periods of time. And I just, this is like a lot of what they talk about in this article was just like it's very technical. And I was like, oh man, I could probably spend like all this stuff here, right? Like rack switches and all this stuff. Like if you're really interested in how this stuff works, this is a really neat article. But what caught my eye was just the scale that we're dealing with.
These are the big NVIDIA GPUs too. Like not the, this
the
is not like
PC.
A
PC.
Yeah. Not like an equivalent 4090 or whatever. This is their top end stuff. So that is mind boggling, but Meta is going all in on this. It looks like.
Yeah. And actually that's a good segue. And I tried to find this and my brain tells me that it was from Ethan. It was something Ethan shared on I wanted to say LinkedIn, but I think it was on Twitter again. And it was I didn't have a source or anything for it like that. And I meant to grab a screenshot and just got sidetracked. But it was an estimation on the number of GPUs that the large organizations have currently that they're using in these. And do you want to guess at who the number one and number two were?
So number one, I'm going to say Google, number two, Amazon, maybe. No, not even close. Is NVIDIA number one?
I don't know if it was actually on the list. I think it was, in my recollection, I'm going to find this and I'll post it. But I want to say number one and number two were Microsoft and
that
Meta.
Makes sense. Yeah. Wow.
And they were like, obviously, there's probably a lot of interpretation happening here, right? Like, how do they get these numbers? But they were like one and two neck and neck. And if you were to look at the graph, like those folks are up here and everybody else, I'm looking at the screen trying to get it, is like down here. Like it wasn't even, but the gap between these organizations, and I think that goes back to what we talked about before in that article where Amazon wants to own this environment. They're playing a lot of catch up still. Like I think the number for them was like 50,000 versus 150,000 for Meta.
Wow. So, okay.
Yeah.
So like 3X behind.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Compute is going to be so interesting in how this works out. Like it's going to be such a valuable almost commodity, right? Like a utility almost, it feels like the ability to rent compute time on instances like that. So yeah, I get, these are basically turning into utility companies for AI training. It seems like.
Well, yeah. And they say that sort of in this article here somewhere is like, we're going to use this massive platform to train our models and then make those models available to other organizations that want to leverage them.
Right.
So yeah, this, like I said, this goes way down into the weeds, but it just what really grabbed my attention here is just the scale of what it is they're creating.
Fascinating.
So, yeah, I can only imagine like the work that's going on in creating these clusters, just massive compute clusters, right? All right, let's talk AWS Accenture and Anthropic. I'm going to zoom in, get rid of the sidebar. You shared this one with me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what? Tell us what this is about.
So this is looking like AWS, those three companies, Accenture, Anthropic, working together to help healthcare organizations scale kind of in a responsible way. And yeah, they're collaborating, granting access to Anthropic's models, so probably the Claude series, through Bedrock, and using that to create kind of safe agents. So it looks like, yeah, just another example of how the space is moving. There's going to be a lot of demand for this kind of agent-based, healthcare assistance. I saw another post about essentially what is an AI agent nurse that's doing follow-up calls with patients, that kind of thing, checking for symptoms. So
I shake my head, like I'm shaking my head like no, but I'm shaking my head more like, wow. Like,
yeah,
we were talking about this afternoon. It was like, not you and I, Karen and I, and she said something along like, how long is it going to be before this really gets, I don't remember the word she used, but like, I'll use the word scary. And not that it's like, not that we're talking about Skynet, but like, how long is it going to take before you maybe don't talk to a doctor? At least first,
right.
You're talking to a nurse AI agent that is smart enough and it's secure enough that people are willing to share information. And it's that first line is actually
the pre-screening, right?
AI. Yeah, it's pre-screening. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be very long.
No.
No.
And from what it seems like, there's another huge news item that NVIDIA dropped this week, but that's coming really fast.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot. Let's make predictions, because predictions are always fun. I have a number in my head that I said to Karen, but along this path, this idea of a nurse AI or that first line screening, what do you think? And forget the fact that most people are going to be freaked the hell out about this and go, I'm not telling a computer about this weird bump I have on my neck. Like, I want to talk to my doctor.
Right.
It was weird that I said, well, I don't know why that popped in my head. But anyways, like, how long do you think it's going to take before people are comfortable to do that?
I mean, people are already talking to these kinds of agents, and not, this was like last year, right? You had these applications where people were dating these agents. So I think you'll get pretty comfortable with them pretty quickly. And it doesn't take a lot. There were chatbots in the 80s, like 70s, 80s, that were just a state machine, basically. And it would just respond like it was like a therapist bot. I can't remember what it's called, but it would just respond with like, and how does that make you feel type questions to your prompts, your inputs. And people were believing that was passing the Turing test back then. So, I don't think it'll take much.
Maybe. Maybe what? What were you going to say? Give me
maybe once they get like some kind of visual face agent that's good enough, like just a simulated avatar, basically.
Yeah. Has the stethoscope, the white coat. Make you feel nice and comfortable.
Yeah, doesn't freak you out when you see it.
Its eyes aren't like twitching at the same time.
They're not like
something's just quite a little
going off in two directions.
Yeah, yeah, something's like not quite right.
Three nostrils and
my
I don't think it'd be long.
My prediction: 2 years. Yeah, I hedged mine a little bit and I said something along the lines: I think it's going to be a generation thing.
Like, okay, yeah.
Would my parents become? They're in their 70s. Talking to a computer versus the doctor in the office, I would say no. And I would suspect that they probably won't do it in their lifetime. But I think as you get younger, you're probably like that time frame of a couple years for younger generations is probably, I would say that's a reasonable thing. For me, I might think 3, 4, 5 years maybe. But again, it might just be sort of just a person's personal level of comfort. An old boss of mine, he said this, he used this analogy one time with me. He's like, remember when internet banking first came out?
And
nobody did it, right? Like everybody's like, oh, I'm not doing that. Somebody's going to steal my money. You didn't want to be the first person to do it. But once you sat around with your buddies one night and you're, you know, at the local pub having a drink, and one of your buddies goes, "Oh, I do that all the time." You're like, "Oh, okay. Well, it's not that scary.
Must be fine." Right?
And that's always stuck with me, because he's like, once that happened, once you talked to people that you trust that are doing it, you're like, "Oh, well, then maybe it's not that scary." I think that's sort of going to be that inflection point where things just accelerate at an insane speed. Now, you mentioned, actually, one more thing on this one before we move on. Where was it? I scrolled to it. Oh, this piece right here. So forget the company names here. Not important. Coming together to help organizations, especially those in highly regulated industries, including public care, blah, 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 to responsibly adopt and scale customized Gen AI technology. This, to me, like, we often talk about, like, well, how do companies like ours, and, you know, how do we use Gen AI to actually grow our own businesses as consultants and stuff like that?
Sure.
Yeah. Again, forget this idea of highly regulated industries, because you'd obviously need very specialized
people, knowledge.
Yeah, you'd have to make sure you're obviously, you know, doing things that meet certain compliance requirements and stuff. But this one paragraph right here sort of stuck with me, is really maybe what happens here is, you know, it's in the cloud provider's best interests, like AWS, to make this as easy it is possible to consume, right? And you can see the way they're doing it with the chat playgrounds and stuff like that already. But as a professional services organization, maybe this is the future. The future is helping other organizations who are maybe a little less technology focused understand how to best implement these technologies within their own organizations, right?
Yeah. Whether that's securely and
Whether that's custom development, whether that's just providing practical guidance on how to do this stuff, this is the paragraph that really stuck out to me. And it's, I think this is going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
No, I agree. And I think this is more about getting that healthcare data that is so sensitive, interacting with these kind of AI systems in the safest way possible, right? So looks like they're focused on that, which is good.
You hinted that NVIDIA is coming out with something.
Yes.
Is this what you were hinting towards, this article?
Yes, it was. So
Walk us through it.
Okay. So what happened was NVIDIA has released a whole suite of microservices in like the medical tech, the health tech space, and making them accessible. So you have specific trained like models that leverage expert systems like AlphaFold, the protein folding algorithm, for automating and helping with drug discovery, material science, all that kind of good stuff. And again, this is like what we were mentioning before, like with the simulation aspect of this. This is going to be like this could be crazy for discovering new drugs and healthcare solutions.
When I looked at this, I immediately thought of an article we talked about a couple of weeks ago where, you know, it might have been Devin that we were talking about. You have a tireless companion, really. Yep. Like, it's just going to work nonstop while you're sleeping. It's testing things out. It's trying stuff. It's figuring out things for it. You wake up in the morning and it's like, hey, look what I found. And then you can go
exactly.
fine tune it or point it in a different direction.
Well, it's like we were talking with robotics as well, right? There was that system that was developed to generate new compounds, like test new polymers, combine chemicals together to get new alloys, that kind of thing. And that was with a physical robotic arm, but the simulations have gotten good enough where you can simulate that in digital, in cyberspace. And yeah, that seems to be where NVIDIA is pointing a lot of its resources. So they're trying to really juice discovery of and scientific research with this.
I didn't get a chance to look through this one. I just skimmed it very quickly. I should have fed it to Bedrock and said, give me the one sentence summary of this with Claude or something. The thing that stood out to me as I was kind of quickly looking at it is the fact that, okay, they launched 25 microservices today. How long is it before they launch the next 25, the next 50? Like,
exactly.
And this concept of just continuous acceleration of all of this stuff it's going to be impressive to watch over the next
domain specific applications. And you know what's really funny is, you know how you were just asking me how long until these kind of avatars show up? Well, there actually is one in this suite of microservices.
Is there?
Yeah. It's called Hippocratic AI. It's a test. It's like they say, it's a task-specific generative AI healthcare agent, powered by a safety-focused LLM for healthcare, connected to the cloud. So, basically, it's a phone agent. It can schedule appointments. It does pre-op outreach, post-discharge follow-ups, which is what we were, again, a thing we were talking about, following up with patients.
Yeah,
and it's over the phone, so you don't even need to see a physical person, right? Like, it's not gonna weird you out that way.
I'm an introverted person by design, so actually having to see a person, I'm okay with that. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
From the comfort of your own home, regardless of the weather, you just get the info that you need and continue on with your day.
So those kind of phone follow-up agents are here, like, now.
Yeah, that's, it's crazy. Crazy stuff. So I'm going to skip over this one, and I'm going to go to this. Because this one, this is the two AIs talking to each other.
Oh, yeah. This was interesting.
So if you just read the summary here, this alone is, I don't want to use the term scary because I don't think it's scary, right? I think it's a glimpse into, to kind of use a phrase that I talked about earlier on, like this idea of crystal ball gazing. This is really where we're heading with this, in my opinion, right? A team has succeeded in modeling an artificial neural network capable of this cognitive process. And the cognitive process is, it's very unique for humans. Like, I can, I know how to do something. So I'm like, okay, Travers, you do step one through N, and you're like, oh, yeah, now I can do it. And up until this, or sometime in the recent past here, it's been very hard for AIs to do that. So you can train one AI to do something, but up until recently, it was very challenging or impossible to then task that AI to say, go teach this AI how to do it. So what's happening here is one AI learns a series of tasks and then teaches another AI how to perform.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. What do you think?
It's really interesting, right? I think the methodology was they simulated two language regions of the brain. And they trained the kind of teacher model to on a couple of motor tasks, right? Like point to the left or point to the right, or tell me which of these two lights is brighter type situation. And then based on like the motor inputs, like those like the stimuli, it would construct essentially a language based guide on how to respond or what actions to take. And it passes that along to another agent, and then that one can do the
same thing.
Yeah.
You know what? It reminds me of, I've watched these videos in the past and I've seen documentaries about like how, like, I think it's ravens.
Oh, yeah.
They're like insanely smart, right? I'm like, look, I can show you how to get this nut out of this thing. And you show that bird a couple times and that bird's like, oh, I can do that. And that's the first thing that just popped into my brain when I read this. I'm like, it's like they're training birds. And it's, oh, wow. And it made me think about, and I don't know if it's directly related, but as I was going through this, it made me think about some of the conversations we've had over the last couple of weeks. Like, we talked about how they're now training robots using GPT-4, and GPT-4 is simulating environments and then asking the robots to perform a particular task in that simulated environment to teach it.
Synthesizing the reward functions, right?
Yeah, like it kind of felt similar to this, but I'm not sure if I'm missing the mark, but it's sort of like got GPT-4 over here creating these virtual environments to and asking a robot to do something and figuring out how to best tell that robot how to do it, how to reward it so that it learns faster. And this kind of felt similar to that, unless I've missed the mark on it. I don't know.
Yeah, the difference here is you can transfer kind of those training like tasks to the model just with language.
Yeah.
Right. That's the main thing here.
Yeah.
And kind of makes me think maybe you could train like a robot with, you could show it how to do the task and then it could pass it on to another device, right? With instructions on what the task is.
Reminds me of a certain movie, but crazy stuff. So, and the last thing we've got here, and this sort of goes back to maybe the quality of life conversations that we have a lot with AWS updates is the fact that, hey, we know how to generate these images, but now we can generate them way faster. And just on that theme, the concept of faster, I don't know, I'd like to think it's just not me, but one of the reasons I keep going back to Claude and Sonnet is continuously shocked at how fast
it's that, snappy, it's responsive, is, right?
Right? And I actually did some really highly scientific tests. You know, okay, here's the prompt, and I'm going to run that same prompt through Claude, and I won't pick on anything in particular, and these other ones.
Selection of other models,
All in Bedrock, right? And I know there's a lot of variables here. It's a silly test, but I was just like, everybody keeps saying Claude's really fast. Like, what's the difference? And I ran it through the other ones, and the quality of the responses were all good. Like, you could have taken the response from my whatever the prompt was. I don't even remember now. And run with it, right? You would need to edit it and turn it into something that was more usable. But the quality of it was all acceptable. But Claude with Sonnet just blew everything out of the water. Like how fast it was. Yeah, it was, I'm amazed. So that's what kind of grabbed my attention with this one when you shared it, is the fact that they've got a system now to generate these images much, much faster than they could in the past. So walk us through this one.
Yeah, it was interesting. So it's an MIT study, essentially, where this team took tools like Stable Diffusion, DALL-E, and essentially what they did was they built a simpler generation model, but optimized it based on the output of those models, like the Stable Diffusion and DALL-E, and kind of tailored it to generate, to be more efficient at generating those images. So you can kind of pick out what the useful parts of the image generation process, I guess, and it'll give you a potentially much more efficient model for this kind of generative work. And the image quality, it's fine. Like,
yeah, no, it's fine.
It's bearable.
And I took the same sort of thought from it. Like, there was a couple statements in here where, to your point, like they just simplified it, but they got it to the point where you could simplify it to a certain level and still get the high quality image that people would expect. Because there was those less number of steps, it was able to do it in a much faster period of time. Yeah.
30 times faster, they're saying.
30 times, yeah. So not like one time, significantly faster.
in order of magnitude faster. Right?
Yeah. Awesome. So I think we've made it through all the articles for the week.
Great.
Yeah.
Well,
I was joking that we need two different podcasts. Maybe we don't need the movie podcast, but the Gen AI stuff is taking up more and more of our conversation every week. Maybe we need a Gen AI
kidding.
Podcast and a AWS update podcast.
Maybe.
Let's get more than two viewers, and then we'll expand our empire.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, awesome.
You have it in chat, yeah.
Oh, is Kevin in chat?
He is, yeah.
He is? Okay. I'm having chat problems. I don't see any updates in chat for some reason. Oh, it's always user error. Hold on. Let me see. Before we wrap up. Remember, I think I was saying this to you the other day. This is a really great piece of software, but there are so many different little widgets, and I think I'm looking at the wrong widget, and I'm not going to be able to find the widget I want. So, hi, Kevin. Thanks for joining us today. Anyways, folks, enjoy your weekend. I'm calling my week here at this point. I've been a little under the weather the last couple of days. So my goal for today was to make it through this. And then I'm going to go find my bed and just lie down. So
perfect.
Enjoy your weekend, everybody. And we will be back next week. And until then, go out and find all the cool Gen AI stuff and start building cool things.
Yeah.
Perfect. Bye for now, folks.
Take care.